Welcome to Technology and the Arts, a bi-weekly podcast exploring the connections between the worlds of technology and art. In this installment, we'll share some interesting news, websites, and online resources we have come across recently, including Yahoo Answers, The Jing Project, YouGoo.com, Photoshop Express, and SouthParkStudios.com. Plus, we'll discuss the cool flip digital video camera and the first ever playback of what is likely the world's first audio recording from 1860. We'll talk about all of this and more just ahead on Technology and the Arts for Wednesday, April 2nd, 2008. Now here are your hosts, Brian Kelly and John Lemazny.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the Technology and the Arts podcast. As always, Technology and the Arts seeks to explore the connections between technology and art and to establish a forum for discussing the impact technology has made on the human creative process and on literature, music, and the visual and interactive arts.
And to let you know who we are, my name is Brian Kelly. I'm a journalist by trade, amateur songwriter, musician, and science and technology enthusiast living in central New Jersey.
And my name is John Lemazny. I'm a husband, father, artist, student, musician, poet, and technologist living in New Jersey.
John and I are recording this conversation via call recorder for Skype. John, it's good to talk to you again. How are you doing?
Very good, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. Busy, but excellent nonetheless. What have you been up to lately?
Well, one of the things that's coming up is next week, next Thursday, I'm going to be in Princeton talking to the 55-plus computer users group about Firefox and Thunderbird. I'd like to give another thank you to Princeton Public Library and Janie Herman for letting me come to talk about nutrition and computers. I talk about how I lost weight. Of course, all that presentation material, including photos and audio, is all up on lemazny.com. I also want to give a shout-out to Janie and her crew. They are doing the poetry podcast again. And, of course, for longtime listeners of Technology and the Arts, you know that we talked to Princeton Public Library and Janie specifically about that project.
That's right. April is poetry month, right?
That's right. Tonight, that is Wednesday night, it is an opportunity for me to present with a panel about identity theft, which is, I know, one of Brian's favorite topics.
As it happened to me once.
I'm going to be talking specifically about choosing good passwords and using encryption and other techniques on your computer in order to protect your identity. That's my particular presentation in the panel. Linux Users Group in Princeton, second Wednesday of every month. I just want to remind everybody, for those of you in the Princeton area, in the Lawrenceville area specifically, you can come to the Lawrenceville Library and come and see the Linux Users Group in Princeton, even though we don't meet in Princeton. Trenton Computer Festival is coming up in April. Brian, do you know the date?
I believe it's April 25th through 27th.
Thank you very much. The 25th is a Friday.
Right, that's the Friday. They have that dinner and some special programs
for,
that night.
For most everybody, it's actually the Saturday and Sunday when you can come and see the great flea market they have and come and listen to all the great talks.
It is up on our events calendar, so...
On our events calendar. It's also on the events calendar and speaking engagements at lemazny.com. I will be giving the talk that I gave to Princeton Public Library again at TCF. And so if you missed it and are interested in how I lost all my weight, you might want to stop by Trenton Computer Festival.
Now, you're presenting on both days this year?
That's right. I'll be presenting. I'm in the catalog.
I saw that this morning. That's why I brought that up.
Yeah, I'm going to be presenting around noontime on both days, and I'm really looking forward to that opportunity because in the past I've only given one talk on one day during Trenton Computer Festival, and I always felt like I was limiting myself as far as audience, so I'm hoping that I'll be able to reach more people this way. I want to give a big thank you to Doug Powell and everybody else at the Brookdale Computer Users Group, where I was lucky enough to come and present on both XAMPP, which is the ubiquitous multi-platform server that you can run basically as an executable. It gives you Apache, MySQL, PHP, and some other goodies. And we demonstrated WordPress and some other applications. That was a lot of fun. And then we switched gears and talked about Inkscape and the GNU image manipulation program and Scribus. And despite some hiccups that we had that were inevitable, really just because of the setup, we really did have a good time, and I always enjoy talking to Brookdale. How about you, Brian?
Well, my most recent weekend was a little hectic. It started out Friday night. March 28th was the evening of my show with Christian Beach. I was playing organ and tambourine for Christian again, and that was part of
I'm really sorry I missed that. I would have loved to have been there. I hope you got good audio and video.
Uncle Mike, Christian's Uncle Mike, took some video. It's not on YouTube yet, but hopefully it will get there soon. He said he was going to try to have some of our footage up at some point this week. So the show was a release party for the Main Man Records 2 CD tribute set to David Bowie, for which Christian contributed his cover of Bowie's 5 Years. So we went on kind of late for us, like around 11:30 or so. Right after the night's headliners, longtime Bowie guitarist Earl Slick and Alice Cooper bassist Dennis Dunaway, co-writer of School's Out, took the stage. Because we were told the bands were being held to a strict 5-minute setup rule, we opted to use my Elasis synthesizer instead of Christian's.
5 minutes? That's ridiculous. 5 minutes?
Yeah, there were a lot of acts. But it turned out they weren't really being strict with this 5-minute rule. But anyway, instead of Christian's 1970s-era Yamaha organ that I usually play, we used my Elasis synthesizer to be a little more, you know, expedient with our setup routine. But it turned out we didn't have a sound check at all, and the synth was way too loud in the mix, and I only had the volume slider, like, up a hair from the bottom, and it was, like, blasting. I didn't really have any control over volume.
Right.
And then Christian's guitar wasn't coming through on the monitors at all, and it just sounded really bad from the stage. I don't know if it sounded any better from the audience, but on stage it was a little bit frustrating. But, you know, the audience seemed to be having a good time, so hopefully it wasn't as bad as I thought, but it was a little depressing on the stage during the show. So there was one point where I just stopped playing because the organ was just too damn loud. It was really ridiculous. But anyway, we probably did have time to set up the organ if we brought it, which would have solved a lot of issues. But live and learn. But Christian does have a couple of solo shows coming up in the next few weeks. He will be appearing as part of the Writers in Raritan show at the Chico's in Raritan, New Jersey, on Wednesday, April 23rd. And he will be playing a set at Triumph Brewpub in Philadelphia on Wednesday, June 4th.
Get out of here.
Yes, he is. He is playing Triumph in Philly.
We're going to have to check that out. Because I've been looking for a reason to get to Triumph.
Okay, well, you know, come June, though, you're going to be a little busy, so.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the band will be back together for a Wave Gathering Festival gig in Asbury Park during the weekend of June 20th through 22nd. So check out Christian Beach's MySpace site at www.myspace.com/Christian Beach. He did add the version of 5 Years that he recorded, and when that organ kicks in halfway through the song, that is yours truly. So you can take a listen to that, and you can go to www.myspace.com/mainmanrocks, and 5 Years is there as well as some of the other tracks from the Hero tribute to David Bowie. Also this past weekend, I took my first trip to the Barnes Foundation Museum in Marion, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philly. And it's a really incredible place, and it's funny how a few years ago the talk was that Marion wanted the Barnes out of the township, and then it's announced that the Barnes will be moving to Center City, Philadelphia, and there's all sorts of squabbles going on with that. But then, in the meantime, now Marion has all these signs up saying, save the Barnes, you know, keep the Barnes in Marion, which is, like, just bizarre. But local politics aside, the Barnes is so unlike your typical museum because the works of art are displayed for the most part as ensembles, because Albert C. Barnes used the collections to teach art, you know, composition, structure, use of color, developments of style, etc. For instance, there was, I believe, a Renoir, which had a patch of red in the bottom center of the painting, and Dr. Barnes felt this was a defect, so he placed a small painting of a child in a red dress above the Renoir in order to, in his view, correct the compositional flaw. So, it's just lots of neat things like that going on. And one final note, the fourth series, or season, in American terms, of Doctor Who debuts on BBC One this Saturday, April 5th, at 6:20 p.m. in the UK. The brilliant David Tennant returns as the Doctor for a third series, and will be joined by Catherine Tate, playing the role of Donna Noble she created in the Runaway Bride Christmas special a few years ago. And she will be his primary traveling companion in the TARDIS for the fourth series. But Season 1 and 2's Rose Tyler makes a return towards the end of the series. As well as...
Can you just clarify something for me?
Yes.
Is Donna Noble the character that was like a stretched out piece of skin with the where the sun exploded?
No, that was Lady Cassandra.
That was just my little opportunity for you to geek out.
That was Cassandra, the last human.
The last human, that's right.
Yes. Who really wasn't human at all after the work she had done, but that's about it on my end of things, John. Anything related to technology and the arts you would like to talk about this week?
Absolutely. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was my favorite new time sync. Those of you who have never heard the term, it's essentially any place that you go online or any game that you play, or usually technology-oriented, but it doesn't have to be, where you essentially just lose hours with something that's sort of mindless and fun. But
I will be talking about my version of that in my segment, but just wanted to... forewarn everybody.
I'm considering myself forewarned. In this case, it is not mindless at all. In fact, it's something that I think is really powerfully engaging the mind, and that is Yahoo Answers. I've known about the site for a while, but I guess I didn't pursue it in the way that one does in order to really sort of feel out the site in its entirety. And once I really saw what was going on there, I sort of fell in love with it. I know Google tried to do something like Yahoo Answers, and it was one of the few services that Yahoo had done comparative to Google and really had won out. Yahoo Answers is one of their most popular sites, and what it is essentially a place where you can use and get points based on answering questions. And the question can be about any number of topics. So, for example, Brian might go onto Yahoo Answers as his Yahoo account and might answer questions about music, or answer questions about Doctor Who, or answer questions about Phillies baseball, or answer questions about any of the myriad of things that I know that Brian is an expert in. And based on that, he can gain points. And that's really the beginning and end of it. Is that it's a game where you gain stature in the community based on your knowledge of everything. The way that you gain your points in a faster way is to give really great answers, because if the person who asks the question feels that your answer was the best one, you get 10 points. And I would say that you can rack up points rather quickly. If you answer 5 questions, for example, regardless of the quality of your answer, you can get 10 points. But you can get much further, much quicker, by answering with really good answers. And you're also able to be thumbed up and thumbed down based on what other people feel about the quality of your answer. So if you give a really good answer, the asker may not actually rate your question at all, but everybody else can. So if you have a really sensible answer, chances are you're going to be given the best answer if the asker does not give you the best answer rating. I know that sounds kind of complicated, but it's really cool, a lot of fun, and I've really fallen in love with it. So if you want to join me on Yahoo Answers, just look for Lemazni on Yahoo Answers. I listed here that I wanted to talk about Photoshop Express, but Brian's going to talk about that a little bit later.
Well, I'm not really going to talk about much about it. I just want to make people aware that Photoshop Express has launched and it's in beta. But
it sure is.
So
so much in beta. It really. I mean, there have been plenty of software as a service solutions with photo editing that are so much better than Photoshop Express online. Photoshop Express, in reality, the application that you install, what's that called? Photoshop Limited or something like that.
LE or
Photoshop, something. You know, half-assed is a pretty good application. It does most of what you need to do. It even has layers. Photoshop Express on this website is awful. I mean, it basically is. It allows you to lighten pictures and darken pictures and remove red eye and all kinds of like silly nonsense. But to use that as a real tool for editing, it's nothing. And a much better solution, I think, is Google's Picasa product that is free on both sides, not only on the website but also in the application, and is a much more sophisticated tool than Photoshop Express will probably ever be, because Adobe wants you to buy their real products. So they're not getting it. They're not getting what the whole point of social networking is, and I just think it's obvious. I think it's a really lame product. Another flap is that their end-user agreement that you sign up for when you create your account says basically that they own your photos when you put them up there. And they said that their lawyers are revamping the license to make sure that they don't just simply own your photos when they go up there. But that's what the EULA says right now, is basically that they can do with your photos whatever they please, including using them in advertisements. And so a lot of people just sign up for stuff without really reading that EULA, and it's really poor. I mean, Adobe, come on. You have the entire market. Act like it, please. I know I'm not supposed to be biased, you know, but I am, and it's just lame. It's just horrible. It's bad. And, I mean, if you go to, like, Mashable, for example, and do a search on photo software online, you'll find a list of fantastic software that does exactly what Photoshop Express does, except better, or at least as good. And, you know, yeah, big deal. You can store your photos online. Flickr's been doing that for a little while now. So, you know, congratulations to Adobe to, you know, finding out that it might be good to build your online experience if you have a really secure offline experience. Whatever. I think it's kind of lame.
Okay.
Jing Project. Did I talk about the Jing Project last time?
I don't believe so, but I see it all over your Tumblr.
Yeah, for anybody who's taken a look at my Flickr pages recently at flickr.com/photo/Lemazni, you see all these like screenshots all of a sudden. And the reason for that is that I have this little semicircle ball at the top of my screen now that when I click on it, it gives me an opportunity to very quickly do either a screenshot at the size that I choose at that moment, or a screencast for whatever length I choose. And it automatically throws it up on Flickr as long as I have my username and password in place. Or it puts up a video, a screencast, on screencast.com, which they own. The Jing Project has changed the way that I record interesting visual information. And like I said, on my Flickr account, it's been inundated with all these cool new photos. Related to that, I got a note on my Flickr page telling me that my free account is limited in a way that I had no idea that it was limited, and that is that I can only show 200 photos at a time. So right. The newest photos that I upload will be included. They'll be shown to people, but after 200 of my oldest photos, No one will be able to see, including myself apparently, won't be able to see those photos until I buy a pro account, which is $25. You know, I know Flickr needs to make money, but between their situation with Microsoft and their limitation of my account, and that's a pretty serious limitation. 200 photos is not enough for anybody. I guess I ought to fork up $25, but I just was sort of like dumbfounded by the way that I was notified about that.
Yeah, but if you give them $25, you know, it'll just wind up in Microsoft's coffers at some point.
That's the way I'm thinking about it. I don't feel real good about giving Flickr money right now. Okay, so drum roll.
I can't do a drum roll.
Okay.
Sorry. Wait, hold on. I don't know if you heard that. Okay.
Yeah. The flip.com, I don't know if I even talked about that last time. I think I did.
I think we discussed it in a IM chat
session, but not in reality.
I don't think in the podcast.
Okay. Well, the flip.com was reviewed by David Pogue, and soon after it was reviewed by David Pogue, I signed up. I went and got one. What it is, in case you don't know, is it's a video recorder that is solid-state drive. It is really hard to damage because there's no moving parts. It has a built-in USB plug, so essentially the flip is this little USB key that pops out from the side of the unit. So I can plug it right into basically any computer, either a PC or Mac, and immediately start working with the video on the device instead of having to encode it into something before I can work with it. So there are two models. There's the 30-minute model and the 60-minute model. I got the 60-minute model for after shipping and all that. It was $200. But well worth it. I mean, just an amazing product. And I got it in probably 5 days or so. What more can I say? If you go to youtube.com/lamazny, you can see the first video that I recorded with it. And the video is stunning. Stunning in quality, certainly. And the video that I haven't uploaded is even better than the video that you see up on YouTube. Just the fact that I can do an hour of video on a handheld electronic device that is solid state, able to transfer right off the device onto my computer and be usable immediately without tape, without any moving parts. It's such an exciting venture. And the Flip, congratulations that you did it right. There are a lot of critics of the Flip that say, well, it only has a 2x digital zoom, and it only doesn't have expandable memory, and it doesn't have, you know, it's not beautiful, and it's not offered by Sony, and it doesn't have DV quality, and it doesn't, you know, do regular snapshots. You know, I don't care about any of that. I just want to be able to get video very quickly onto a storage device and get that very quickly off of the storage device onto my computer. The Flip allows me to do that. Great product. Go and get it. Another thing that I saw in the New York Times was micro digital projectors that are up and coming. They're essentially small footprint devices that allow you to project. And right now I'm carrying a device that's probably about 8 pounds that I use to do projection for presentations. I would much prefer to pull something out of my pocket and be able to do the same thing. It sounds like lots of people, including Canon and HP, are working on devices that will allow me to do this. So just wanted to say huzzah to that. There is an article suggesting Vista be thrown out. This is cioinsight.com, or check the show notes. You'll see the link to the story. And another story that talks about a Windows 7 subscription model that essentially suggests that Windows in the future will be freeware to start with, and then as you want to have extra added features, you buy those, and you download them and install them, and they'll use their DRM nonsense in order to protect against you misusing those things or using them without paying for them. And I think that's kind of great because I often wish that I had like the most minimal Windows experience on my computer so that I could put on all the stuff that I actually want that is provided by other companies. And it sounds like Microsoft may be offering that to me. Somebody who's a real Microsoft fan will be able to build out, you know, their $1,000 operating system and have a lot of fun with that. I'll be using Linux, you know. I just wanted to say that I'm finally in love with Radiohead's In Rainbows. It took a couple listens for me to really grok what was going on, but now that I've had a chance to get familiar with it, I really look forward to listening to it. It has fantastic songs on it, and many of you probably already know this, but just wanted to pass that on. I wanted to briefly talk about the Safari auto push on Windows machines. They have a Safari for PC, Apple made it available, and then they decided to start pushing it out to users through their iPod updates feature, their iTunes update feature.
I think it's just the general Apple update, because I think it does iPod and QuickTime.
It does, but there's been sort of a lot of flack coming out on the internet about Apple just suggesting this as default install. And while there have been some great reviews for Safari on PCs, there are plenty of people, myself included, who were not really interested in having Safari installed on their machines. And I've been reminded like three times before I turned off the reminder. It's a little too aggressive, Steve. You know, I love your products, but if I want Safari, I'll go and get it. Okay? Stop right. Sending me reminders. Yugoo.com, Yuugoo.com, is something I've been waiting for a long time. What it is, essentially, is an online service that allows me to share my desktop by sharing a URL and a PIN with somebody over either email or instant messaging. So let's say that I saw something on my screen and I wanted to be able to demonstrate it to Brian. All I'd have to do is open up Yugoo, sign in, and then use that URL and PIN that they give me, send that to Brian. Brian would click on the link, type in the URL, type in the PIN, and he'd be able to not only see my desktop, but actually control it in real time. I have been waiting for this for a long time. It is scary, but if you know what you're doing, remember, I'm pushing it to you. You're not pushing it to me.
Yeah, but I don't know what I'm doing most of the time.
The benefit for me is that if somebody calls me up, I do a lot of support in my work. And so if somebody calls me up and says, I don't know what you mean. You know, I don't know what you're talking about, you know, this thing at the top of your screen. What I can do is very easily send them a link and tell them to type in a password, and they can see exactly what's on my screen so that I can say, you see this here? I want you to click on this. And they can begin to say something like, you know,
what in the what now?
What in the what now? Yeah. I guess I just want to talk about the fact that we at Rider University are in OIT are being asked to give up our work phones, and we'll instead be reimbursed a certain portion for our own phones, our own personal phones. And so for the first time in my life, I'll probably own my own cell phone, and I'm looking at iPhones. I'm also looking at some Verizon solutions, but I guess I just wanted to do a shout-out to iPhone there.
Well, when I think I just saw today that the 3G version is coming out at some, like they're expecting it like relatively soon.
That's what I heard that too. You're the second person who mentioned that to me, so I'm excited about that. But at the same time, it's a lot of money to spend on something like that.
All right.
I wanted to remind everybody that Battlestar Galactica, the premiere of the final season, premieres Friday. So if you're a Battlestar Galactica fan, make sure you don't miss it. I wanted to say congratulations to Joe Woodall. He got a job at Carnegie Hall.
Congratulations, Joe.
I'm sorry?
I say congratulations, Joe.
Oh, congratulations, Joe. And couldn't happen to a better guy. I wanted to say that lemazni.com has been upgraded to the latest version of WordPress, and I actually installed a Zotero plugin that allows lemasni.com posts to be imported into Zotero in the same way that you might import posts to New York Times to Zotero. And if you are a Zotero fan, I encourage you to go to lemasni.com and wait for the page to load and try it out. And finally, I wanted to say that my quest for the perfect beer goes on. I just recently got a 4-style sampler pack of River Horse beers from Lambertville. That is, River Horse Brewery is in Lambertville. And I just wanted to say I really enjoyed the sampler pack. How about you, Brian?
Well, as you mentioned before, you talked about spending hours of mindless fun on something. Well, the guys behind South Park have put every episode of South Park online at southparkstudios.com, and when I saw that that was launched, I had a couple of nights of very little sleep because I was just going back and watching some of the ones that I had missed and some of the ones that I really enjoyed in the past years, and seems like some of the more recent ones are actually uncensored, which makes it even funnier. But it looks like as you go further back into the archives, it's still, there's all a bunch of bleeps. But anyway, that was a lot of fun going back and watching all these great episodes of South Park. Ars Technica reports that March 26th was proclaimed Document Freedom Day in order to raise awareness about free document formats and open standards. According to Document Freedom Day's About page on its website, the day represents a, quote, global day for document liberation, unquote. More than 200 groups in 60 countries across the globe held events to educate the public about free document formats. Unfortunately, the listing showed only one event in the United States. Florida Free Culture had a table outside of Library West at the University of Florida, and that was it.
Surprising.
Yeah, well, you know, I think maybe Microsoft may have been threatening some Americans with torture if they had participated. Anyway,
they're torturing me.
They're going to be torturing a lot of people once they buy Yahoo, but anyway. Just a quick yet odd note, Google Maps Street View cameras apparently captured a drug deal or some kind of transaction going down on a street on the south side of Chicago. Google has since removed that Street View image, but it can be seen by clicking the link in the show notes. And that link will take you to a Geekology.com page. So just be aware of the cameras of the Google Maps Street team, and be careful what you're doing out there on the streets. And you know what? Don't do anything in broad daylight. That's probably the first tip I can give anybody. And finally, researchers in Berkeley, California, managed to play back what is believed to be the world's first audio recording, a 10-second snippet of a singer crooning the French folk song Au Clair de la Lune in April 1860, nearly 2 decades before Thomas Edison invented the phonograph. The French recording was recently discovered on a phonautogram. I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but you can see how it's spelled in the show notes. Anyway, it's a recording technique, or recording medium, I guess, developed by Edward Leon Scott de Martinville, was not designed to be played back. It was meant to be archived and deciphered visually by future generations of humans who I guess were going to figure out how to read these sounds. So these researchers at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory in Berkeley used optical imaging and a virtual stylus on high-resolution scans of the phonautogram to play back the sound for the first time ever. So check out the link in the show notes, and I don't know if the article that I've linked to, the New York Times article, I don't know if that has the audio, but I will provide a link to the actual sound clip because I did hear it on one other site, but I didn't provide that link. I will go look for it, and I will put that in the show notes. But now it's time for the Technology and the Arts Events Calendar.
Here is your Technology and the Arts events calendar. Video stuff, electronic gaming through the years, takes place at the Orange County Regional History Center in Orlando, Florida, now through April 13, 2008. The exhibit marks key developments in arcade games, video consoles, and computer game technology, and illustrates the importance and relevance of these toys. The show explores gaming's history, as well as its cultural and sociological influences, past, present, and future. For exhibit information, visit www.thehistorycenter.org or call 1-800-965-2030. Fringe Exhibitions in Los Angeles, California presents Blue Morph, a site-specific interactive installation that uses nanoscale images and sounds derived from the metamorphosis of a caterpillar into a butterfly. The exhibit, an art-science collaboration between media artist Victoria Vesnan and nanoscientist James Gimzewski, runs now through April 12, 2008. For more information about Blue Morph, visit www.fringeexhibitions.com or call 1213-613-0160. Star Wars, Where Science Meets Imagination, runs from February 9th through May 4th, 2008 at the Franklin Institute's Mandel Center in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The exhibit, featuring Star Wars artifacts like Luke Skywalker's original landspeeder from Episode 4 and scale models of X-Wing, Y-Wing, and TIE fighters, is organized around solving human needs with two technology themes, getting around and robots and people. For more information, visit www.fi.edu or call 215-448-1200. And coming April 25th through April 28th, 2008, is the 33rd annual Trenton Computer Festival at the College of New Jersey in Ewing Township, New Jersey. Created in 1976 by Sol Libas and Alan Katz, the Trenton Computer Festival is the longest-running computer festival of its kind in the world. Professional seminars will be held on Friday, April 25th, with the rest of the weekend featuring an outdoor flea market, an indoor exhibit and sales area, and general speaker sessions. For more information, visit www.tcf-nj.org. To stay informed about events related to technology and the arts, please remember to check out the Technology and the Arts events page at techarts.wordpress.com. Well, it looks like we are just about at the end of another Technology and the Arts podcast. John, anything you would like to share with the audience?
Well, as always, I'd like to say to our listeners that if they have an idea for a story or know about a show or event related to technology or art, to let us know about it by emailing us at technology.arts@gmail.com. Also, feel free to send an email just to say hi. And you're always welcome to leave a comment on the Technology and the Arts blog at techarts.wordpress.com.
That closes the curtain on another Technology and the Arts podcast. Stay tuned for more news and resources related to technology and the arts when we come back with our next show on Wednesday, April 16th, 2008. Until then, for Technology and the Arts, this is Brian Kelly.
And this is John Lemazny. Take care.
The views expressed by the hosts of Technology and the Arts are not necessarily those of guests of the program. Conversely, thoughts and opinions expressed by guests of Technology and the Arts are not necessarily shared by the hosts. For more information about the podcast you have just heard, please visit Technology and the Arts on the web at techarts.wordpress.com.